with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I guess it's the obsessive compulsive in me, but I like months that begin on Monday. Here's hoping this will be a good October for us all. It is the first day of October 2012. We are 24 days away from our 7th anniversary here on The Horn, because this is, after all, The Horn. Head On RadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. We like to call what we do here Conversation Radio, and you are welcome to join in the process. The Horn is easily accessed via the interweb tubes. Remember, it's not a big truck. God bless you, Senator Stevens. That at some point in time, that phrase, you know, we will eventually have like a Department of the Internet, or a Department of Cybernetics. It'll rise to the level of a cabinet position in 100 years or so. It'll have its own building there in Washington, D.C. And it'll have to have its own seal. And I propose that the Department of Cybernetic Communications of the year 2112 in the United States of America have as its motto, "It's not a big truck." Just love it. Just love it. Anyway, you can access The Horn in a variety of ways. The easiest way, of course, is simply to go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the button that says Listen Live. But if you can't do that, if you've got a mobile device or something, smartphone, what have you, you can get apps like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio and take The Horn with you anywhere you care to go. You can get the podcasts via the feed at whiterosesociety.org, or you can go and find it at iTunes as well. Let's see, what else is out there? Streamer.com also has us. Tuner has us. There's a lot of internet radio streaming platforms, almost all of which have picked up The Horn, but for some reason or another, we seem to be doing nicely at TuneIn, and I'm grateful for that. This is listener-supported conversation radio, internet only. And you can keep all of this going. Got to start it. You know what? I'm really proud. We got a couple of $100 ahead toward building a little bit of a cushion because we ended ahead of the game in September. So here we are at the beginning of October. We've got $2,500 to go, and we begin now. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. If you want to think about how this best works, it works best when we bring in about $100 a night. That's how it all shakes out. That's how we get the bills paid. It's the first of the month, and we got bills to pay. And we will hopefully get them paid. There is a tab at headonradionetwork.com. It says Contribute, and you can go there and check and get the... If you don't like PayPal, you can always use the snail mail, and the snail mail address is there. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. And remember, when you send a check or a money order, please do not make it payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Our creditors get the money, internet service providers and equipment accounts and such as that. And that $2,500 we try to raise every month, well, that's actually less than what it takes to keep all of this going. So if we can raise about $100 a night, we're ahead of the game. With that having been said, And I'll get an email from Kate in a minute, and she'll say, no, Bob, you have to explain to them that this is that this is how we get to November. Oh, that's true. This is the very real difference between what we do in October determines whether we're here in November. We've had very dramatic reverses in our funding, and that means if it doesn't happen here on a month-to-month basis, the 7-year history of the Horn is in jeopardy. So every month is dire. Plus, of course, this being the month of October, and based upon what our buddy Scott in Sweden has previously said, October represents another opportunity to beat the Swede. You beat the Swede, and the Swede came through for the month of September. So thank you, Scott, and thank you to all of you. Now, on to business. Here at about 6 minutes past the hour, as we begin this brand new, fresh, shiny week and month. Monday, isn't it? Yes, yes, it is Monday. Oh, that must mean something. Yes, yes, it does. Oh, my goodness. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I know, and you know, too.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Oh.
That's right, friends and neighbors, hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas that you can't see, but you can hear me talking about. You will hear, you will have access to, you will learn about Morans of all stripe. Right-wing Morans, hateful Morans, ignorant Morans, funny Morans, but right-wing Morans, all of them. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Women are urged to keep close watch on their purses as the Morans can get a little grabby. No one will be admitted to Moran Monday after the first 5 minutes. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. It's the absolute truth. And I don't hardly know where to start. Well, I do, kind of. I do. We'll start here. We'll start with something that is not... It's a little confusing. And I don't know who the Moran is out of this, but I'm pretty darn sure there's one somewhere. What do I mean? Well, it's this. It's a matter of 1L Michelle Bachmann. Now, what am I to do? I get sent an article that says, headline, Bachmann, we must ban falafel in school lunches. Agnes asked me about this one. Bob, did 1L Michelle really say we must ban falafel? You know what my response was? I hadn't seen the story yet, so I said, wouldn't put it past her. And so, lo and behold, there on my Facebook feed, I saw this. By the way, you can follow me on Facebook at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. I'm at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, on Twitter as well. Jump right in. It's a great way to communicate. Now, this is the story. You tell me how, well, I'm just going to read it. Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann courted controversy today. This is dated September 28, 2012. By claiming that falafel and other jihadi foods should be banned from school lunches in the United States. In an interview with local television station KSTP in Minneapolis, Bachmann explained that after visiting a local elementary school, she was shocked to find that falafel, a fried vegetable patty popular in the Arab world, also popular with Bill O'Reilly, okay, that's not in the text, was being served as an option on the vegetarian menu. Ostensibly in the studio to discuss her close race for re-election against Democratic challenger Jim Graves, Bachman instead used the time to appeal for a nationwide movement against Arab cuisine. Startled by the parochial nature of her statements, KSTP anchor Chris Johnson felt obliged to challenge her reasoning. I have to ask, Ms. Bachman, why is that a problem? I mean, some children like the taste of falafel. What's wrong with that?
Chris, falafel is a gateway food, responded Bachman. It starts with falafel, then the kids move on to shawarma. After a while, they say, hey, this tastes good. I wonder what else comes from Arabia. Before you know it, our children are listening to Muslim music, reading the Quran, and plotting attacks against the homeland. We need to stop these terror cakes now before they infiltrate any further.
Bachman stopped short of advocating a ban on all Arab food, saying that responsible adults can probably use Arab food safely in moderation.
I have a friend in Texas who has to homeschool her children because her local public school forces students to eat hummus. It's everywhere now. This is really scary stuff. I have no proof that President Obama is forcing our children to eat Arab and Middle Eastern food, but it would certainly fit the pattern.
Here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams we can eat.
You tell me. Was there a dead giveaway that was satire anywhere in the piece?
With the exception of the Bill O'Reilly remark, I read it exactly as it was presented.
I don't know what the Daily Current is.
Apparently neither does what's the name of this outfit? Found this out on Facebook today. My buddy Eric. Noted that the story is indistinguishable from reality and has been picked up by Al Bawaba, the largest independent producer and distributor of content in the Middle East. Never heard of this outfit. Has it really? Because last week, or week before maybe, the Iranian news agency picked up an Onion story that said Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was more popular with rural Americans than Barack Obama and ran it as fact. Yeah, this is the same outfit that ran the story about Todd Akin saying drinking human breast milk cures homosexuality. That's true. And it is a satire site. But I don't know how I came to make that judgment call. And that's the nature of this Moran nomination. And I guess the ultimate nomination goes to those people in the district where 1L Michelle Bachman and her husband live. Or claim to live. The place where they've fleeced the government for various forms of welfare for a number of years. You know, wealthy welfare. Really welfare. Quite welfare, thank you very much. They're the nominees for this Moran Monday edition of the Horn. They're the ones who keep sending this idiot back to Congress. Yeah, see, the two that were my tip-offs, Horst is in the chat room there. Have you ever been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? You should go. It's fun, it's free, it's easy. Just jump right in. Just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom and get busy. Well, I mean, not like that. But, yeah, there are two phrases in there. It's a gateway food and terror cakes. And those are about the only things that seem and they're not way over the top. They're just a millimicron over the line from anything that you would expect 1L Michelle, the batshit crazy Bachman to say. You ride horse. Tell a hubby still slays me too. A reference for Mr. Bachman. Tell a hubby. But the fact of the matter is, as we get nearer to November the 6th, reality is, it's going to, I don't know, it feels like what? Like the chemtrails are just dropping LSD on all of us. There is plum crazy all over the place. Falafel. Better that our school children should eat it than Bill O'Reilly should rub the back of some unsuspecting woman with it, right? I mean, wouldn't that be a little messy and greasy? I like falafel with the, what is it, Uzbeki or, no, tzatziki. Cucumber yogurt dipping sauce with the dill. Huh. That's what it feels like, Waggy. You have now entered the election zone? Yes! Nothing is good. Everything from now on is plum crazy, and we're going to spend the next 1 month and 5 days waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because we know that the Repiglicans are masters of dirty trickery. And they're even giving hints that they intend to engage it. As was mentioned on the program a couple of weeks ago, I guess the Beckerhead is back broadcasting again. Got a fancy low-lit set. Looks like it should probably, there should probably be a little bit of, Kenny G playing in the background or something. I saw my first clip of it today. Isaac sent it along via the tweeters. It's a clip caught by Right Wing Rot Watch. Should probably save this for Wednesday, but by Wednesday there will be all kinds of religious weirdness out there. It's this new TV show where in this low-lit living room, Glenn Beck, who has grown a new chin, by the way, is sitting talking to that, I think this is that goober from Wall Builders whose book was pulled from publication because it was just full of outright lies. They're babbling about Willard Romney and the fate of a nation. Now, I warn you that the Moran power of two Morans going at the same time may be overwhelming. So you may want to do the whole Odysseus trick and lash yourself to the mast and stop your ear or whatever. So just make sure that you can't go crazy. It's like a siren song. Here you go. We haven't had a Beckerhead clip in a long, long time. Welcome back to Moran Monday, Glenn.
You know, up on the set, we have Washington praying, and I talked about that earlier this week.
Yeah.
That was the moment where, you know, somebody who watched that said, we're on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Because the man prays.
That's right.
Yeah, he knows. I mean, you listen to a guy pray like that, we're on the wrong side.
That's right.
I know Mitt Romney wasn't your first choice, nor was he mine.
Okay, let's, just a couple of things. He is pointing toward a painting of George Washington praying as if that painting was created at the moment during the Revolution when George Washington fell on his knees and the Army's official portraitist just happened to be standing there with his easel and said, hold on, George, keep praying, buddy, don't move! Until he got it. And then, you know, he filled it in with paint after he got the basic sketch down. It is as if he had had the Picasso of the guy playing guitar on the wall, he would say, and yes, in Spain, people really are angular like that. You caught it, Ron and Raleigh. Bob, did he say Willard Romney and Birth of a Nation? Let's find out. Wow, this is almost like the old Al trying to find out how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop, isn't it? Let's find out.
He knows. I mean, you listen to a guy pray like that, we're on the wrong side.
That's right.
I know Mitt Romney wasn't your first choice, nor was he mine. He was
right.
My third. I am to the point to where, I think God is trying to make this so clear to us that if it happens,
yeah,
it's his finger.
Yeah.
Because, boy, nothing looks...
It's his finger? Where, Glenn? What's going to happen? Are you flashing back to that hemorrhoid surgery you had there, buddy? If this happens, it's God's finger. Kind of lost. What does this mean? What? If Romney gets elected, God's finger did it? Surprise, 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 Luann. That ain't my finger, neither. There was an old joke that was the punchline to it. We won't go any further. If this is what we're going to get from the Beckerhead, it sounds like he's gone full-on TBN on us.
You know, up on the set, we have Washington praying, and I talked about that earlier this week.
Yeah.
That was the moment where, you know, somebody who watched that said, we're on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Because the man prays.
That's a pot. That's right.
Yeah. He knows. I mean, you listen to a guy pray like that, we're on the wrong side.
That's right.
I know Mitt Romney wasn't your first choice, nor was he mine. He was
right.
My third. I am to the point to where, I think... God is trying to make this so clear to us that if it happens,
yeah,
it's his finger.
Yeah.
Because, boy, nothing looks good.
Right.
And yet, everybody I know who I consider a spiritual giant feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me that I feel good because I'm like, there's no reason that I should feel good on this. But the one thing I want to talk to you about is I know I did a special, I don't know if you saw it, David, a couple of weeks ago on Mitt Romney, where Romney was, where we exposed some of the stuff he does in private.
That's
okay?
Right.
Really? I missed that. What kind of stuff does he do in private? Is this the part where he straps the dog on the... does it involve something... Is there a crane and Rafalka involved? Some of the stuff he does in private. You know what? We can go into that. I saw... Oh, God, I forget who the columnist was, but I was doing my reading over the weekend. And I saw a column pointing out the fact that the Romneys blew it on convention night with the speech that Ann You People Romney gave, in which she mentioned her multiple sclerosis. And the argument was that they blew it because they had a chance to humanize the Romney bot by showing that he was devastated by the diagnosis. And it linked to the Boston Globe news article of June 27th, 2007, Journeys of a Shared Life, Raising Sons, Rising Expectations Bring Unexpected Turns, by Neil Swidey and Stephanie Ebert. It begins with the Seamus story. And way down in the body of the article, we get the story of the 1997 MS diagnosis of Ann Romney. I have been tangentially associated with that, because at one time, and it was about the same time, we were very close to having the same thing diagnosed for Agnes. And the argument that was being, and it's terrifying. It's and if it's terrifying for the spouse, imagine what it must be for the person being diagnosed. Some of you don't have to imagine, because you've been through something similar with some other disease. It was there at Massachusetts General Hospital, sitting in the neurologist's waiting room, when Mitt grasped the severity of what his wife was up against. One of the brochures he spotted was about Lou Gehrig's disease, another about multiple sclerosis. There was no brochure for pinched nerves. That's what he kept saying. You just got a pinched nerve, Ann. Mitt turned to his wife and, seeing the worry in her eyes, said, "I can deal with anything as long as it's not fatal."
Really? This was the humanizing moment for the Romney bot?
"I can deal with anything as long as it's not fatal."
And he's saying this to the person for whom it might be fatal.
"I can deal with anything as long as it's not fatal."
No. That's not humanizing. That shows that he's a Romney bot.
"Must not be fatal. Cannot compute fatal." "Now, honey, I'll spend any amount of money we need to spend to take care of you as long as it's not terminal. But if it's terminal, sweetie, you're hitting the bricks. Because I'm just not that brave." And there was another quote in the same article that said that he at some point said, "I can eat toast and jelly. I can live on that." So his first thought was how he would continue to have food prepared for him if his wife was debilitated. This is why they did not try to use the MS issue to humanize the Romney bot. Because you can't humanize the Romney bot. The Romney bot is a construct that comes from Kolob and masquerades as a human being. Because a human being couldn't do this.
Out of the blue, one day, we were told to build a 30-foot stage. Gathered the guys, and we built that 30-foot stage, not knowing what it was for. Just days later, all three shifts were told to assemble in the warehouse. A group of people walked out on that stage and told us that the plant is now closed and all of you are fired. I looked both ways. I looked at the crowd, and we all just lost our jobs. We don't have an income. Mitt Romney made over $100 million by shutting down our plant and devastated our lives. Turns out that when we built that stage, it was like building my own coffin. It just made me sick.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, that was a paper mill, a paper plant, in Marion, Indiana, that was profitable, that was running three shifts, 24/7, or whatever, however paper plants run. They weren't in the red, but the parasites of, namely, Bishop Willard Romney and Bain Capital infected the host, killed the company, and what, shipped it to China? Don't know. Poor fellow says it was like building his own coffin. No, what you did is you erected your own scaffolding. Because every last one of those workers was hung out to dry by the Romney bot. There is no humanizing. There is no humanizing Bishop Willard Romney. And so, you know, we find ourselves here with a little more than a month to go before the election, struggling to hang on to some connection to reality, while people like the Beckerhead have lost all grip on theirs.
Spiritual giant feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me that I feel good, because I'm like, there's no reason that I should feel good on this. But the one thing I want to talk to you about is, I know I did a special, I don't know if you saw it, David, a couple of weeks ago on Mitt Romney, where Romney was, where we exposed some of the stuff he does in private.
That's
okay?
Right.
And I felt really bad because I didn't know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And when you know
I didn't,
his...
I didn't either.
Yeah,
I knew none of that. I thought I knew Romney.
Right.
And I knew none of that.
That stuff is critically important because that shows his character.
Mm-hmm.
And that, would you agree with me that that is at least kind of on the line with this guy?
It's a whole lot more than kind of.
This guy being George Washington. That's where the Beckerhead is now. Bishop Willard Romney is just like George Washington. And if Romney can win, it will be a miracle. That's the upshot of that assertion. Hoo-wee! Let's see, Dave. Dave's written in. No, you're not locked out of the chat room, Dave. Try again. Horst in the chat room. Romney Ryan, 2012. Here, have a petard. They built that. Brutal. You wonder a little bit about the Beckerhead's sanity. Don't think he's screwed down real tight. By the way, the winning strategy the Romney Ryan team have decided to employ in the Old Dominion, Old Virginia, that Kenyan Muslim with the deep-seated hatred of white people is now going to try to kill off God-fearing Virginians with, no, really, Lyme disease. They've sent out a flyer all over Northern Virginia promising that the Romney administration will fight Lyme disease, a massive epidemic threatening Virginia. See, you have to use that voice when you say things like, massive epidemic threatening Virginia. The Washington Post, of course, says that according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, there are less than 1,000 reported cases of Lyme disease in Virginia per year in a state of 8 million people. But nevertheless, desperate to find something, wouldn't more people have coverage for something like Lyme disease thanks to the Affordable Care Act? See? Problems. But I want to be cognizant of something. I'm beginning to sense There are some out there who are doing the 2012 Barack Obama victory dance a little early. One of the people I've communicated with for the longest time on the interweb tubes, in terms of politics and liberals and progressives and so, is our old buddy Bart Kopp. And I was reading Bart's page today, and I got a sense of jubilation that Bart is just absolutely sold on the notion that Obama's going to run away with this. And maybe he will. But not before the for-profit media have done everything in their power to make this look like some sort of neck-and-neck horse race. In fact, that was the phrase that CNN used today when they put out the results of their CNN ORC survey. No, really, ORC. ORC is headquartered, of course, in Mount Doom, with their statistical and analysis branch deep in the mines of Moria. ORC. Saying, oh, it's neck and neck. It's 50% to 47%, and that's within the statistical margin of error. Oh, this is going to come down to the wire. Now, why on earth would they want to present a false sense of narrowness if, in fact, it's not there? Why would they want to project a neck-and-neck horse race if it looks more like a boat race? Could it be, as I've noted, that there are billions of dollars still at stake from now until November the 6th that for-profit media outfits want to make sure come flowing into their coffers? It's taken me a little bit of time, but I finally understand it. Our electoral system has nothing to do with integrity. Our electoral system has nothing to do with one man, one vote. Our electoral system has been transformed, thanks to things like Citizens United, into a wealth redistribution system for the for-profit media. Do you think Citizens United would still, and its other associated progeny, do you think that our political system would be the way it is? Do you think Citizens United would be decided the way it is if, thanks to the Telecommunications Act of 1996, or if it had not been there, if American media were still broadly held by several hundreds, if not thousands, of companies, as opposed to the way it presently is, where it's all conglomerated in the hands of six corporations that are all run by right-wingers? Now, I'm not going to get out my foil helmet or anything, but I can't help making that observation. Yeah, yes, Marty. As a matter of fact, the chief pollster for ORC is a Balrog. Yep. Marty's noting earlier, I don't wonder about Beck's sanity. How do you wonder about what doesn't exist? Lyme disease? Have they watched Slither or something? No, actually, what happened is they got all buddy-buddy with a non-doctor. He's a very influential so-called social conservative. That means he wants to control women's lady parts. Innards. His name's Michael Ferris. And he's on a crusade about something he has invented called chronic Lyme disease that has to be treated with long-term, really expensive antibiotics. I say he invented because, again, the Centers for Disease Control say that there is no such thing as chronic Lyme disease. But somebody's told Willard Romney that this is the way to really reach those social conservatives in the old Dominion. But there's something even more nefarious at work here. We spent some considerable amount of time last week talking about Bibi Netanyahu and his picture of his bomb. I've been in correspondence with our buddy Robert in Australia, who may actually be pulling together that little video clip that we discussed. That'll be great. Don't know. Robert will keep us all posted. But I've read all these stories out of generally the Israeli press that say that Ehud Barak and Bibi Netanyahu have been sitting together in offices hallucinating their brains out and have just about reached a decision to go ahead and start the bombing. How would that be for an October surprise? It would need to happen, what, about the third week of October? To really give the repiglic and filth echo chamber a chance to spin up into high dudgeon? Barack Obama is weak on foreign policy. Our poor little bedraggled neighbor Israel fighting for its very survival by making a first strike war, blah, 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 and the heathen Iranian and Muslims, 13th Imam, Mahdi down a well, yada, yada. That's the October surprise that I fear. But over at Alternet today, I read a story by Craig Unger, from, reprinted from Salon. Headline, Romney bombshell, struggling campaign plans October surprise. A source reveals a strategy to make Obama seem weak on defense in campaign's final month. Theoretically, this October surprise will, according to a high-placed anonymous Republican source, it'll be based on intelligence information regarding the attacks in Libya that killed U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens on September 11th. The source says the conversation took place in D.C. last week. They're calling the Republicans are calling the new strategy the Carter strategy or the October surprise. They plan to make Barack Obama look weak on foreign policy. Now this is a cool customer who has casually, well, I don't know if it was casually done or not, but who has remorselessly ordered the killing of a whole lot of people with drone strikes, at least to one or two of whom were American citizens, and were not given any sort of due process under the Constitution. Just saying. They have come up with evidence that the Obama administration had positive intelligence that there was going to be a terrorist attack. Okay. The source described the Republicans as chortling with glee. The Romney campaign will try to paint it to look like Obama had advanced knowledge of the attack and is weak on terrorism. Oh, God, we will have an entire subsector of Libya truthers. They intend to portray Obama as a helpless Jimmy Carter-like president. Because, see, that Jimmy Carter thing is stinging now that his grandson done busted Bishop Willard flat cold with his 47% recording. It was said that the meeting was attended by GOP operatives who were the top guys in the party. Rove wasn't there, but his buddies were. And the sliming process is underway. I give you as Exhibit 1 a segment from Radio Rwanda. And yes, this involves that awful creature and you're going to have to just deal with it because, like I said, this is evidence of an unfolding strategy, and here we go. Maybe.
Are we seeing media bias in the election coverage? Well, here's a recent Fox News poll result. It shows that 47% of people say they believe news outlets are spending more time defending the president and bashing Romney.
The hands you saw, along with the book, they belong to conservative columnist and author of Mugged, Ann Coulter, who joins us this morning.
Morning.
She's an 8-time New York Times best-selling author.
Can you slow down a little bit? Can you give somebody else a chance to
just keep spinning them out?
There's a lot to say.
We talked about this yesterday on the show, and perhaps this is media bias, perhaps it's something else, and you can dive into it and discuss it with us, which is this Benghazi attack and what unfolded with James Clapper on...
Now, hold on. She's on there to flog her miserable book about race. And I mean, she got owned by Whoopi Goldberg and everybody but Elizabeth Hasselbeck on The View over the same. But she goes on Fox and she's there to flog her race book. But for some reason or other, she's just taken straight away to Benghazi. What could this creature possibly have to offer about Benghazi? She's not a part of the government. She's not part of the intelligence community. She doesn't have deep sources. She just makes shit up. But then again, maybe that's the point.
What happened in Libya? If this were George W. Bush... and it happened on his watch.
Right.
How would the media have covered it differently, or would they?
Right. I'll go you one better. What if it were Jimmy Carter? It's as if you were living in...
What if this were George W. Bush? I'll go you one better. What if it was Jimmy Carter? We go back to the Salon article by Craig Unger. He said they were jubilant about how their new strategy and said they intended to portray Obama as a helpless Jimmy Carter-like president and to equate the tragedy in Libya with President Carter's failed attempt to rescue American hostages in Iran in 1980.
On Friday, in the response from what happened in Libya, if this were George W. Bush and it happened on his watch,
right?
How would the media have covered it differently, or would they?
Right, I'll go you one better. What if it were Jimmy Carter? We're living in two different worlds if you're channel surfing. It's about the Benghazi attack and what's happening at the UN on Fox News, and you go to some of the other channels, and it's, oh, Mitt Romney made another game-changing gaffe today. It's like we're living in different worlds. If this were a different incompetent Democrat president, say Jimmy Carter, it would be as if they were in a hostage crisis. No, we're just not going to talk about it. We're just going to talk about Ronald Reagan making a mistake during his campaign. On MSNBC, they've completely converted in the Massachusetts race Scott Brown, our beloved little Scott Brown, versus Elizabeth Warren, fake Indian, who apparently checked off. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming that she checked off falsely that she was a Cherokee to get a job teaching at Harvard Law School. She has the lowest requirements of any professor at any of the top law schools, and she refuses to release that information.
Wait. She said the evidence is unequivocal that Elizabeth Warren checked off that she was of Native ancestry, and then she says, but she refuses to release the information. But it's what? Anthrax? Yeah, she said it was. She said it was incontrovertible.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Me neither, Inigo. Two references to Jimmy Carter. A direct reference to the attempt to rescue the hostages in 1980. Isn't this playing out word for word from what Craig Unger wrote at Salon? Let's see, Bob Corker, Republican senator from Tennessee, described the administration's response to the terrorist attack in Libya as bizarre. Willard Romney and Paul Ryan yesterday both got into the game. Bishop Willard said, I think they want to do their very best to keep the people of America from understanding exactly what happened. We expect candor. We expect transparency, particularly as it relates to terrorism. Yeah, but not tax returns, right? Eddie Munster added, you know, the zombie-eyed granny starver, why is he not on the same page with his own administration officials who are saying that this is a terrorist attack? We'll leave it up to you to decide whether it's a cover-up or not. This is very clearly coordinated. Then the Daily Beast. Why did it take 8 days for the administration to acknowledge the 9/11 attacks in Benghazi were acts of terrorism? On and on and on. And then you get, you know, anthrax.
Stake during his campaign. On MSNBC, they've completely converted in the Massachusetts race Scott Brown, our beloved little Scott Brown, versus Elizabeth Warren, fake Indian, who apparently checked off, I mean, the evidence is overwhelming that she checked off falsely that she was a Cherokee to get a job teaching at Harvard Law School. She has the lowest requirements of any professor at any of the top law schools, and she refuses to release that information. Everyone knows she stole someone else's suffering.
Maybe we'll get back to that. Stole someone else's suffering.
She is being attacked, or rather he is being attacked for raising the issue. They're claiming it's racist, and he's attacking her for being a Cherokee. No. It's exactly the opposite. He's attacking her for not being
for
a
not
Cherokee,
being, right.
Lying about being a Cherokee. And, in fact, one of her, she's related not only not to a Cherokee, but to a white enforcer of the Trail of Tears. She's stealing the suffering of Native Americans to get a benefit to teach at Harvard Law School. And you would not know that from watching MSNBC.
But you would know some of this from reading your book, Mug.
Yes, you would.
And your book is about, you say, how, I guess, liberals have played the race card, historically, you believe, to win blacks over?
Well, they're always using race to win voters. They, for 100 years, they denounced black people, insisted on segregating black people to win a segment of the white vote, Democrat segregationists, and Klan sympathizers who were Democrats. Now,
oh, God, it gets old, doesn't it? It's crazy. Just nuts. Kevin noticed something in the story about the CNN orc poll. 47% of orcs support, you know. Oh, what a coincidence, says Kevin. The percentage that said there was media bias just happened to be 47%. Yeah. And then 47% are supporting Romney in the orc poll, and the Fox poll says 47% says they're media bias. Them orcs stick together, don't they? Ron and Raleigh said, I was down to the Kroger picking up some Goya Saison for my black beans and rice when I got to the checkout and happened to glance at the book rack and saw something that made my blood run cold. The book I saw was The Killing of Kennedy by, wait for it, Bill O'Reilly. Sweet Jeebus, to borrow a phrase from Killer Joe Scarborough, Bob Billow is to history as Fox News is to, well, news. After the hash-up he made of the Lincoln assassination, you would think that no publisher would touch a nonfiction book from Billow. And then this question, by the way, Bob, why does anyone listen to Ann Coulter? This horse-faced heifer has no bona fides that I can discern. No, she doesn't. Never has. But that's the beautiful thing about being a Republican. They're not necessary. You just have to get on there, get on the Fox, or wherever, or maybe Bill Maher, and say outrageous bullshit things that 47% of this country will go, well, all right, and she seems kind of a hateful thing, but yeah, maybe. Eesh. I agree, Sandra. This effing bitch needs to shut the up. Michael says, I missed your discussion last week about BB's bomb clip art, but my dad can't stop talking laughing about how it looked like a prop from Rocky and Bullwinkle, a la Boris and Natasha. You know, it's just, it's an aesthetic thing, Michael. I too am a Bullwinkle fan, and Moose and Squirrel. Yeah, it's more than apropos. But I'm a Warner, I was raised on Warner Brothers. And the first thing I went to was the opening lines from Operation Rabbit, 1952. You can look it up, it's on the YouTubes. Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Wile E. Coyote, genius. I am not selling magazines, nor am I working my way through college. You get the idea. So I guess that's a start for Moran Monday, isn't it? I mean, we got enough to work with here. Of course, your nominations are coming up next. I'll be looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And there's other stuff out there too, Mercy. And I'm really conflicted about making a Moran nomination out of this. Because it's, so godforsaken sad. But it's also the world we live in. Horst posted this story from Raw Story on my Facebook wall. It's not made up. It's really, really real. It's horrifying. A Virginia man allegedly killed himself and his family earlier this week, which means last week, in part because he was upset by the thought of President Barack Obama being elected, or re-elected. A family friend identified as Maggie L. told the Daily Mail newspaper, "He felt that our God-given rights were being taken away. He didn't like where the country was going." Albert Peterson, a defense contractor, had a history of paranoia and was also affected by a favorite uncle's recent suicide. On Wednesday, the Washington Post reported that Peterson, his wife Kathleen, and their two sons, Matthew and Christopher, were found dead in their home. According to the Mail, authorities believe Peterson shot his wife and the children before turning the gun on himself. Maggie told the newspaper that his family had a history of mental illness. His father killed himself when Peterson was young, and the death of his mother 5 years ago, she said, nearly drove him to suicide before Kathleen saved him. But more recently, Maggie said Peterson was behaving erratically, sending paranoid political emails daily to family and friends. "They were very well-off people, and they saved a lot of money," she said about the Petersons. "He couldn't understand how the government could be so irresponsible, and he thought it would be on the backs of his boys. So he killed them." The boys were school children. And he didn't like where the country was going. So he murdered his family to protect them from having to live under Kenyan Muslim fascism. Now, the cops don't do things like this, but we might be living in a time where it would be a good idea that they start. If at the time that they were notified of whatever had happened wrong, what do you suppose would have happened had the cops walking into the crime scene, or murder scene? It's a crime. He killed his own family. That was murder. If they had, while wearing plastic gloves so as not to disturb any fingerprints or anything, if they had picked up the clicker and turned on the television there in Shea Peterson, what do you suppose What channel do you suppose? Would have come up. If they had gone to his computer and looked at his browser history, what websites do you suppose would have come up? Had they gone out to his automobile and checked the presets on his radio, what stations do you suppose would have come up? You know, he was just crazy. He's just crazy. That's all. It's sad, it's tragic, but he's crazy. It wasn't because his mind was preyed upon by merchants of hate and venom like Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all them. That didn't have nothing to do with it. He's just crazy. You know, there's a rule out there in lawyer land that says if someone hurts you and it happens that you have a condition that makes you suffer worse harm than the ordinary person would have suffered, it's still your fault. You reckon Sean Hannity has heard this story? You reckon Flush Flimball has heard this story through his cochlear implants? You reckon Laura Ingraham has heard this story? You reckon Bill O'Reilly has heard this story? Do you think there is enough conscience among the whole lot of them for any of them to wonder if perhaps they were the that any one of them was the one who pushed him over the edge so that he would take a gun and put bullets through the brains of his wife and his children? Nah. Me either. Me either. We'll take a little break and come back. It's time for your nominations on this Moran Monday on the Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, the home of conversation radio that you make happen. As I said, we try to round up about $100 a show. Earlier today, we got our first 20 in. And so we are looking for 80 more. That's 40 at 5 or 8 at... No. See, I can't do math on the fly. 8 at 10 or 16 at 5. 40 at 2. However you choose to do it. But that's what keeps this going. That's what makes sure that November gets here. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. If you don't need us to carry the freight, you can direct dial 304-658-3333, and an email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. We'll be back. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hard to believe that second hour intro has been running for about 7 years now. Why fool with perfection? That's the inimitable, irrepressible B-Rez. One of my buddies from around here. Quite a talent B-Rez is. If I ever get him on the phone again, he'll have you rolling. Brilliant, brilliant man. score one for Sandro with the bumper. That was, I remember, artist Loverdose. Ron and Raleigh writing in, "Hey, Bob, all I needed was a hit of X and a glow stick with that bumper." Jim noting Tangerine Dream from Risky Business. Meanwhile, I was watching the chat room as the bumper played. And at 7.09 p.m. Eastern Time, our chat room moderator Sparky posted the following. Headline on CNN just now. White House leaves out key information on Libya attack. Here comes the smear. The Jimmy Carter meme has already been introduced. And, you know, I wish there was just, I wish there was more, there were more than us willing to push back on the Jimmy Carter BS. Because we're finding out more and more that Jimmy Carter was a damn fine president. He was. But by the way, and this is by request from our buddy Marty. He said, "Can't you, instead of that Fox thing, can't you play us something more uplifting, like, you know, that Coulter woman getting her rear end handed to her by Whoopi Goldberg?" It was pretty good stuff, I have to admit. And don't you find it telling? Don't you find it telling that the women of The View are a tougher interview than Radio Rwanda? Yeah. Kate wrote in during the break. She said, "I have my mind parked back on the Lyme disease in Virginia report from the Bishop's campaign. Isn't it ironic that he has proclaimed that he's going to get rid of the deer ticks? You were talking about parasites and ticks recently. The goddess is knocking at my mind's door, hmm?" Yes, she is, because she is a good goddess, the goddess of irony. And Kate says, included is 20 toward the first 100. Come on, folks. It's the first of the month. Hit the button and get it started. It's not fair to run this month right up to the edge. The drop-off is too horrible to contemplate. Thanks in advance, Kate." And Kate doubled that instead. So, that puts us $40. $40, and we'll make tonight's nut. 4 at 10, 8 at 5, 10 at 2. You know. Maybe I'm getting better at this math thing. But this is what keeps it all going. Really does. But no, by request from our buddy Marty, Anthrax Coulter, getting her rear end handed to her. Is this yours? Yeah, why, yes, it is. This is beautiful.
With 40 days until the election, Miss Ann Coulter is back with a new book called Mugged, where she claims that President Obama has abandoned black Americans and that the O.J. Simpson verdict was a great thing for America. Please welcome the very controversial Miss Ann Coulter. Ann.
And not to, I know, it's video, and it's probably unfair for me to say things like this, but Joy Behar looked like she was having to spit out a mouthful of poo when she said Ann Coulter. You're just going to have to trust me on that, if you haven't already seen this.
Okay, I need you to tell me what you're trying to say in this book, because we don't know what you're trying to say.
What I'm trying to say is... race mongering has been very bad for America.
liberals use it to promote causes that have nothing to do with blacks and, in fact, harm blacks. And that excellent lead-in you just gave about OJ, I mean, I think that was the moment, having lived near New York City in the 70s and 80s, which was the golden era. It was like Trayvon Martin and the Duke LaCrosse case every day. With the OJ verdict, white America said, that's it, the white guilt bank is...
Wait. Do you hear the dismissive nature? Now, see, this is what we're talking about when we talk about white privilege. It was like Trayvon Martin and the Duke LaCrosse case every day. Somebody get me a latte and a Marlboro. The Trayvon Martin case is freighted with horror and heartbreak. It was like that every day. Because it's not real to this woman who glows in the dark with white privilege.
The best thing that ever happened
what are you
to black
what are you talking about?
I meant that no longer...
Being acquitted was good for who?
Yes, because you had millions of white people watching with the equivalent of what in New York we used to refer to as the Brooklyn juries, who simply would not convict even guilty black criminals,
Ms. Coulter, please stop, please stop. If you're going to talk about race, at least know what you're talking about. At least know what you're talking about. Well, tell me how much you know about being black.
Well, this isn't about black, being black.
Well, but you just said, you just made all these statements about how black people feel. Tell me how you know that. Yeah, you did.
This is not a book about black people. Uh-huh. It is a book about white liberals. And I do know, and this is a fact, that once for years, Republican policies on crime and welfare, for example, were called racist. When they finally got implemented, after the OJ verdict, I might add, by Giuliani in New York, Reagan and Bush judges overall, tens of thousands of black lives were saved.
Except for, like, Amadou Diallo, right? And Abner Louima. Just saying. Meanwhile, and we'll come back to this, Marty also nominated as his More and Monday nominee the Philadelphia cop who sucker punched a woman at the Puerto Rican Pride celebration in Philadelphia. You can find it at Raw Story. You can find it at Crooks and Liars, the video. The video's there. There's nothing to really play for you out of this. It is merely reportage unless you watch it. And don't leave the program to go and watch it yet. Or I don't know, you can multitask. Who am I? This is authoritarian radio. Don't touch that dial. There are no dials, Bob. Welcome to the 21st century. Philadelphia cop sucker punches woman celebrating Latino heritage. And all you see is some water go up in the air, and then this cop in a white shirt turns around and comes back, comes at this woman, and she may not have even been the woman who spilled the water. Never mind whether she was or wasn't. I didn't know that spilling water was something that would get you punched in the face by a cop, but that's what happens. The Philadelphia cop comes over and punches her in the face. Not slaps, not smacks, punches her in the face. Lays her out. At which point, other officers handcuff her. How dare she fall down on the ground when, I guess there's a law in Philadelphia on falling down on the ground after a cop two times your size, maybe three times your size, has sucker punched you. It was Puerto Rico and Latin Heritage Celebration Sunday, and apparently that requires half the Philadelphia Police Department to be present. You know, don't want them getting all uppity or anything. Astonishing.
But we go back to anthrax culture.
That is a fact. I don't have to know about being black.
To do what I know because you're to be dead. Your facts are just a little shaky. I mean, you're saying that because black people
are
because liberals are what? Because liberals have abandoned black people now because. What? I don't understand.
I don't think liberals ever cared about black people. I mean, 5 minutes after the Civil Rights Act of 64, they start calling everything that has nothing to do with black people a civil rights
Wait
issue.
A second.
Abortion on demand, homeless rights.
So are you saying that liberals don't care about black people? Then are you saying Republicans embrace us in a warm, fuzzy...
I do. We're not embraced back. But, yeah, we charge them.
Wait a minute. So the Southern strategy was a white liberal thing?
No.
It was a Republican thing?
No.
And also, Newt Gingrich calls President Obama the food stamp president. That's not racist?
This chapter.
Wait a second.
Do you believe it was racist for Newt to say... that the president is a food stamp president?
I'm not a big fan of Newt, so we could just skip that for a second and get to the Southern strategy.
Yeah.
Because I specifically...
I'm not comfortable talking about something that you just pinned me to the mat on, so by all means, let me deflect and talk about something that's within the framework of my talking points that I came out here with.
We disproved it. It's an absolutely liberal folklore. Republicans were winning the South since 19...
No, wait. Stop it. The Southern strategy was liberal folklore? How is it liberal folklore if the author of the Southern strategy comes out and says, I was the author of the Southern strategy and we made it work and it turned the South to our benefit? Of course, she also neglects the fact that Lyndon Baines Johnson said after signing the Civil Rights Act, we have lost the South for a generation. Which is true. Because the only reason that those people had been... Look, I know this gets a little convoluted and complex, but we're capable of working through this. We're not Repiglicans. We don't have brains the size of freaking pistachios. Republicans were the Progressive Party in 1860. They had an abolitionist platform. That did not, however, mean that they had a great love for people of color in this country. In the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln was working on a plan to repatriate every person of color in this country to Africa, whether they came from here or not, or whether they had been born here. Progressivism goes on to have some roots that speak to the needs of poor people and persons of color. Our good friend Jeff Biggers addressed some of it in his seminal work, The United States of Appalachia. That's history. That's real. But with Reconstruction came the election of persons of color, men, of course, men of color, to various and sundry state legislatures, as well as even the Congress. And they ran on the Republican platform. The pissed-off, aggrieved, unreconstructed Confederates became conservative Democrats, or remained conservative Democrats. And it was out of that racism that the solid South was born. And they were conservative Democrats because the Republican Party had embraced the idea of some degree of political integration. Is there anyone out there who thinks that were Abraham Lincoln to come back from the grave, that he would be a member of the Republican Party? Jesus Christ, Richard M. Nixon couldn't be a member of the Republican Party today. Neither could Gerald Ford. Neither could Ronald Reagan.
But I've heard this tired old lie about Democrats and yeah, for eons. But the Southern strategy is not liberal folklore. It was concocted, it was put into practice, and it reaped a harvest. Just in 2010, the state legislature of Alabama went Republican for the first time in 100 years. What does that tell you? The same thing happened in North Carolina, didn't it? Yeah, it did. So the only mythology involved here is the crap that Anthrax Coulter simply makes up as she goes along.
It was the outer states of the South. It was Texas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia.
Voting. What are you talking about? We weren't allowed to vote.
Who was trying to get them to vote? Republicans were.
Yeah,
and the first black congressmen were all Republicans. And the first black governor was a Republican.
You're talking about way back.
That Republican skin is so different from
that. That is definitely what we're told. But in fact,
she's got on Barbara's bad side.
The segregationists were all liberal Democrats. It is a lie that they were conservative Democrats.
It was a segregationist. Darling,
everybody was.
White people were. It didn't matter whether they were Republicans or not.
See, Whoopi Dunn said one of them words that you can't say in front of the tender ears of the American people on the censored terrestrial broadcast networks. She done said bullshit. Whoopi. You want to say bullshit where everybody can hear you say it, you just call in any time. Yeah, you just do that. Because, we're that friendly.
No, let me ask you. No, that is not. Read chapter 14 in this book. The first Republican was to be elected in the South.
Listen to my grandmother, who was there, who remembers what happened.
Howard Baker, an aggressive integrationist, first Republican voted elected in Tennessee to the Senate. You have Winthrop Rockefeller, first Republican governor in
Arkansas. But I have a question about today. Let me ask you something about what's going on now. It seems to me, that voter suppression is happening in areas where black people and Hispanics are, and they really is being promoted by the Republicans, not the Democrats. So in my view, and I have a different one from you, it looks as though the Republicans are really going against blacks, not the liberals.
No, and this is a perfect example. Yes, it is, and it's a perfect example. No, I'll explain why. Of liberals using the label of civil rights to promote a liberal cause they support, i.e. voter fraud. In fact, one of the first states in the union to...
Where's the voter fraud? Please. Anybody. What, 13 cases in 10 years in the entire country? Jesus. But like I said, Ann's done got on the bad side of Barbara Walters. Won't be pretty.
Passed voter ID bills was Rhode Island, 85% Democratic legislature, and who pushed it? A black Democrat in the House, a black Democrat in the Senate.
That's not a fact. You may pick out Rhode Island, but there are other states where it's completely Republican-driven.
Why would black Democrats be pushing this? Because they had seen voter
fraud.
Because
they got the Hispanic vote to go to Romney.
Can I ask a general question? Every book that you write is very controversial and shocking, and it's usually an opinion that's disparate with everybody else.
Right.
Do you just write these books and try to find whatever it is that's going to make everybody say?
Yes. Thank you, Barbara. It's amazing. Look, this is The View. This is The View. There is, and there was more integrity in this confrontation than on the entirety of the Sunday news programs. Why, for instance, why does David M.C. Rove Gregory still have a job. What that man did on Sunday is unconscionable. Yesterday, what he did, what David Gregory did yesterday, is nothing if not unconscionable. He actually, why are we surprised? But it's still kind of shocking. It was kind of shocking to behold. I sit around, I watch this stuff. I consider it to be part of my job. But even so, every now and then you hear something, and you say, wait just a damn minute. Because it's so over the top, you find yourself actually stunned that somebody would say what David Gregory said. No, it's not that he went all whoopee and said the and said the bovine excrement word on the television. No, no, he's too far above that. No, no, no. He wouldn't get invited to cocktail parties anymore. Probably wouldn't get invited to get up and shake his moneymaker, literally, with MC Rove. Of course not. It was nonetheless stunning. That David Gregory would openly, notoriously, perhaps is the word we're looking for, say something that absolutely was not said. Because he did. It was kind of surprising, even though, as I've noted, it shouldn't have been. That well, let's start with the fact that David Gregory had as his guest yesterday Ralph Reed? Really? Ralph Reed? Here. I mean, disgraced Ralph Reed? Liar Ralph Reed? No, 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 that's Christian Ralph Reed.
Things, Ralph, if I can interrupt. This is something that Romney says he wants to do in the debates. He had a conversation with Good Morning America about that. Let me play just a portion and have you respond to it in particular.
I think he's going to say a lot of things that aren't accurate. But I think the challenge that I'll have in the debate is that the president tends to, how shall I say it, say things that aren't true and in attacking his opponents.
Give me an example of what he would want to attack, what the president has done, and how you think Romney will handle it.
Well, I think President Obama has, and I want to be charitable here, has a casual relationship with the truth.
A casual relationship with the truth. If anybody on earth has a casual relationship with the truth, it's Ralph Reed. I mean, this is a Christian who despised the gambling and then took oodles of thousands of dollars
in funds intended to make sure that other Indian tribes could not get a gambling casino license because his particular clients wanted to make sure they kept it all. Remember that? It involved Jack Abramoff? Yeah.
He's very eloquent. He's extremely articulate. He's very bright. Anybody who thinks otherwise, who thinks that when you untether him from the teleprompter, that he doesn't bring his A game, is underestimating him.
And there's the teleprompter thing again.
But here's the problem. His words are very eloquent, very flowery, very tickle your ears. But none of it is true. He said that unemployment would never go above 8% if we passed his stimulus plan. It's never gone below 8%. He said that he would cut the deficit in half in his first term.
Did we pass his stimulus plan? Did we? Because it seems to me there's been a Jobs Act on the table for a year that has been stymied by the Republican Party. If I recall correctly, there were people out there saying that the stimulus plan was not going to do what it was supposed to do because it had too many tax breaks in it and not enough actual money going to people who needed money. That maybe, I don't know, that maybe I was hallucinating.
He's doubled it, and he's increased the national debt by 50%. He said he would change Washington and put an end to the partisan rancor. Washington is more polarized and more paralyzed than it's been in the modern era.
Who paralyzed it? Who polarized it? What a piece of crap. But then we come down, of course, to David M.C. Rove Gregory himself. Okay?
Here that Al-Qaeda has not had a chance to rebuild.
Wait.
The president has said as recently as May of this year that Al-Qaeda has not had a chance to rebuild, that Al-Qaeda has been defeated. There is an election on, as we've been talking about, and the president's challenger said, plain and simple, the president failed to level the American people and call this a terrorist attack, because you had to be concerned about another terrorist attack from Al-Qaeda in the Middle East.
That's enough. Did you hear that? The president said Al-Qaeda has been defeated. There's only one problem with that. He didn't say it. On May the 1st of this year, in Afghanistan, President Obama said, and 1 year ago, from a base here in Afghanistan, our troops launched the operation that killed Osama bin Laden. The goal that I set to defeat Al-Qaeda and deny it a chance to rebuild is within reach. And lo and behold, what is this part and parcel of? The whole thing is once again part and parcel of what Craig Unger was talking about in that Salon article. You are seeing here, hearing here, the actual participation of the for-profit media and someone who is supposed to be a real, live, no kidding, honest-to-goodness journalist in a Republican smear campaign. It's running all over. Does this at least tell us that from the media standpoint, as I have been saying all along, the fix is in? Don't nobody need to be doing any victory dancing for Barack Obama just yet. Because there are 36 days between now and the election, 35 days, and there is plenty of evil that can be done in that time. And the Republican Party is not above doing it. 19 minutes before the hour, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, David Gregory, I mean, that guy is, I mean, he's just some sort of conservative operative. I mean, do you hear him? He is forever talking about Simpson bowls. I mean, I'm sure he's wanking under the desk there. And he's always talking about the pain that everyone has to have. Have you noticed this dude? He's sick, man. He's a horror show. I am so appalled by him. I mean, it makes me want Tim Russert back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and we thought that was kind of the bottom of the barrel, didn't we?
Yeah, and it's just like this guy, I mean, it's stunning. And every week he's more and more out of control because he's the one that called Netanyahu the king of the Jews or what?
Oi.
You know, that's him with his membership at the Chevy Chase Club where when you walk in the door, it's like Georgia 1810. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. It's
you know, I mean, he's horrifying. I guess he's doing moderating this debate right now, and it's apparently, from what I can tell, it's some sort of horror show with him not letting Elizabeth Warren speak and blah, blah, blah. I mean, he has to be the worst journalist out there, and every week it's one Republican or conservative bashing Democrats and talking about censorship.
Well, honest to God, Sandra, Ralph Reed?
Oh, he should be. I mean, I thought his ass was scalped. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Shit, you know? It's just,
I mean,
like,
I remember when Jack Abramoff came out on his Mea Culpa tour. I thought that would have put paid to Ralph Reed.
Oh, no. And I can't believe he's back with, you know, with a whole bunch of money to spend, you know, on his attack ad. But, yeah, no, David Gregory. Oh, my God. It's just. I think did you already mention this? I know I sent that email because I was just like looking at the CNN headline, you know, the racist tide. You understand what I'm saying?
It's saw that earlier this afternoon and I just thought, wait, what?
No, I'm like, oh yeah, it's, you know, there's no way. It's not objective anymore because they stand to make so much money. So, you know, you can't believe them. So, you know, we're in a world of trouble here because, you know, I can't look at that because when I know that they're buying ads and taking in all this money, they need for this race to be tight, even if it's not. And the fact that they're posing as a media for public consumption about decisions we need to make in our democracy, no, it's out of control. It's just corrupt. It's beyond belief what's going on now with
I saw the email you sent a little bit ago, and no, I won't be surprised to wake up on November 7th to President Romney either.
Well, I'm just saying, I think that all this kind of planning on a second term, which, you know, hopefully I guess will happen, but I'm not, you know, the mainstream media who stands to take in so much money, I'm not very confident because every poll that I read is showing a serious surge from Obama, not down to him, but down to what a horrific candidate Romney is. And then we turn to this mainstream media and we get this horse race shit.
It's like separate universes.
Yeah. So I'm worried. You know, it's worrying along with I resent that because it's coming from the progressives trying to say this stuff in Florida is like the GOP's Acorn. Excuse me, Acorn weren't doing any fraud.
Acorn was not criminal.
Right, and I don't appreciate, you know, I like his reporting and, you know, the reporting on the progressive side about the vote suppression, but they need to not do that and say that about Acorn because Acorn wasn't found to have done anything wrong. So, I mean, this is just a side note. I just noticed that and thought, well, wait a minute. No, that's not true, you know?
It's not not in the least. So, but they persist with it. But it, look, just, the, you know, the evidence, Sandra, that we've gone over just in the course of this evening of this unfolding of the Jimmy Carterization of Barack Obama, it's going to bust out big time in the next week, and the question is, to what extent will the American people fall for it?
That, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, the whole thing is I mean, the, yeah, it's really not.
I mean, I played that soundbite of the guy from Indiana talking about the day that their paper plant shut down. And there's no reason to think that that man's lying. There are probably tens of thousands of stories just like that out there of people screwed over by Bishop Willard Romney and the parasites at Bain. But here's the opposite side of that coin. Where is the Romney ads from somebody that was outsourced saying, and it needed to happen, I was proud to be outsourced for Willard?
Yeah, oh, I know. It's a joke. And now they have videos of him talking about, well, we the ultimate goal is for us to harvest, you know.
Oh, that harvest line, that went past the parasitic and into the gross.
Right.
I mean that had sort of overtones of dystopian future science fiction nightmares to it.
Yeah, no.
Because you know you can't harvest anything without first killing it.
No,
harvesting.
No,
we're coming up on deer season here in West Virginia. And the Department of Natural Resources is beginning to forecast what the deer harvest will be.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I just was sort of shaking my head. So we're going to be treated to this plutocrat parasite, and you're going to tell me that the race is close? You see what I'm saying? You know, I'm not buying it anymore. Too many people I've heard say, you know, they know. First of all, I'm amazed by how many people I know who are not paying attention to this shit know about that 47% comment. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They know about it. And most people are just not into it. So.
And yet in two instances, as pointed out in email, in two instances just this evening, on the one hand, the CNN ORC poll, and I just love that it's an ORC poll, the CNN ORC poll says 47% favor Romney. And then, lo and behold, there was the Fox News poll that was mentioned in the discussion with Anthrax Coulter, where they said 47% of America thinks that the media are being too easy on Obama and hypercritical of Willard. It's the same 47%, isn't it?
I mean, you know, it's amazing to behold, but I just think we need to really step back before we, you know, start popping the corks for Obama.
Yeah, I Saturday was an entirely different story, but I've been to entirely too many Mountaineer games where defeat was snatched from the jaws of victory in the final seconds of the game. I don't pop no corks till all the time is off the clock. And if Democrats are out there victory dancing, you know, doing a little Snoopy happy dance, we're going to lose. We will lose. And not just the presidency. You know, there's down ballot losses to be had, too.
Oh, I know. But anyway, on what funny things 10-year-olds say filed, my little niece, some little classmate said, my folks are voting for Romney. Simone said, are they rich?
Beautiful. No, living with Auntie Sandra has had nothing to do with her worldview.
I just, oh my God, you know, I'm thinking, oh no, but I had to laugh at that one.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Are they rich?
Basically, I mean.
I'm surprised she didn't say hideously.
No, no such luck, you know.
Well, yeah, it'll happen. That's what she'll say in 2016. By then, the hideous rich will have completely set in.
Oh, God. Well, in 2016, I guess they'll be 14. Still not old enough, but older.
No, but they'll be full. I have a feeling they will be completely plugged in by then.
Well, no, poor little Simone. She's like, well, she's the one that was looking at the unrest in Egypt way back when, wondering what the hell. So she's.
Well, speaking of unrest, I mean, are you following the, getting a little hot in Spain and Portugal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's well interesting. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Spain because it's such a big economy. I think it's the biggest one. Maybe it's next to Italy, but it really isn't Greece. And today I just read that Germany is trying to keep them from not asking for any money yet.
Yeah, even though, right, because we talked a couple of weeks ago about the response of the German High Court, and they, you know, the German Supreme Court said, yeah, okay, we can do this. But that doesn't mean that that people necessarily want to do that bailout. But what I find most fascinating out of the whole Spanish discomfort is that not only do you have people protesting in Madrid, but people protesting in Barcelona hollering secede.
Well, no, there's that. And I mean, you know, if you have like any knowledge of Spanish history, you know, we're talking straight up fascism as recently as 73.
Sure.
And so, we're, you know, Spain is a new democracy, and I remember in some of my comparative political classes, it was always held up as a model for a transition, you know, into liberal democracy. And so it's just, you know, you got to be shaking, you know, at least I am, I'm like shaking my head, very nervous about what these pressures are doing to Spain, you know.
But going further back, yeah, we've got that memory of fascism, but we also tend to look at Spain and think that, you know, Spain. Well, it hasn't been. I mean, if you go back to the Middle Ages and come up into the Renaissance, you've got various and sundry different kingdoms.
Yeah.
And it's just because it's the entire Iberian Peninsula doesn't mean that it's cohesive. You've got different languages, you've got different cultural traditions. You know, Barcelona is the heart and soul of Catalonia.
Yeah, no, I mean...
And they think of themselves first as Catalonian and second as Spanish, as far as I can tell.
Well, I mean, there's been talk of, you know, commentary coming out of, you know, from the generals. Anytime I hear the generals in any of those countries, you know, you need to get well nervous because they're saying, oh, no, the hell no if these states are going to break off, you know. So... the situation has gone completely political in Spain.
Well, I noticed that I was reading about the prime minister there. You know, the first they had Jose Maria Aznar, and he was a great pal of Bush. That's the guy that Bush looked at and said, you know what the problem is with the French? They don't have a word for entrepreneur. You know, I just remember these little things. Then you had that interregnum where you had a social democrat of sorts.
Yeah.
He gone, and now you've got this, what's his name, Rajoy?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And he's an unpalatable, hateful right-winger of, yeah, I mean, they call him a conservative. But that means he's got fascist leanings, right?
Yeah, well, no, but I mean, and you know, right up the way, you have fascism exercising itself with this Golden Dawn, where they're feeding the people, too, and beating the shit out of Black people who happen to be there.
Yep.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's very scary in Greece too, because these people hold office right now, and they have their thugs out feeding folks and beating people. And they're the fascist party.
And we've seen this movie before, right? I mean, isn't that part and parcel of how Mussolini rose to power?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's also fragile. And, you know, this sort of, the euro is turning into what the gold standard was in the 30s. The euro is now what that is now. So, that sort of discipline didn't work in the 30s, and it ain't gonna work now.
Except for the fact that Spain in particular interests me because of the talk of secession. Because that's, yeah. Oh, look, we're in a new century, and what are we going to get? Are we going to get it on again with the Spanish Civil War? I can't help but think that way.
Well, no, but no, I'll tell you, I mean, they are desperate, and I think every elite and power that be in Europe, they're trying to hang on because they also are assuming that Mr. Obama will be president. So everything seems to be on hold except for Iraq, you know, is kind of not doing what they're supposed to do in their sort of alliance with, Iran. And that is the legacy of the huge mistake we made by invading Iraq. I mean, it's really coming home to roots now, because what you got going on over there is Saudi Arabia and the other sort of horror royal families over there are looking at this budding alliance between Iraq and Iran. It's just a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario for them because, you know, if we had any sense, I'm just speaking and putting my geopolitical hat on, don't hold it against me, we would get together with Iran and we have all the oil we want between Iraq and Iran, and the hell with the Saudis.
It would make far too much sense for us to ever be able to pull something like that off. And historically, if you think back as far as like the 13th century, wasn't Baghdad one of the wasn't it at the time the capital of Greater Persia?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I know all the ins and outs of the history there. I just know that.
Well, I mean, it was conquered by the Mongol horde. I mean, I don't use that disparaging. It's just what it was. The word horde comes from a Mongol word, I think. But anyway, Baghdad was the seat of government for the Greater Persian Empire, I guess, if you want to use that word. And so as a consequence, it's more like by gathering in, they're reflecting a past that made sense to them a millennium ago.
Well, yeah, and it always comes back to Britain and their half-ass, you know, dividing up these countries. You know, that has just been the horror story of all their ex-colonial exports, was how they, you know, left the places. But the thing is, you know, the U.S., and I think Obama is reflecting that in his actions, at least up to this election. They are not interested in starting another war. And mark my word, if he is reelected, you're going to see people running out of Afghanistan, I swear to God.
My question, though, is in these next 34, 35 days, Sandra, what happens if Bibi comes through on what I sincerely believe has been an agreement between he and his old business partner, Bishop Willard, and launches a go it alone attack on Iran?
Now, I don't know about that. I mean, he's been.
Do you consider that completely outside the realm of possibility?
I think it's less of a chance now after his UN performance. Didn't help his cause. Let's just say that it didn't help. Didn't help at all. I'm sorry.
And just what I was able to follow over the weekend, the whole world is laughing.
Laughing. Yes. Yeah, so when I sent that tweet to you, I'm laughing, and yeah, along with a whole bunch of other people, apparently. So I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think he's sort of, you know.
I just see this scenario because we've already seen it get rolling. It's already gotten legs of Barack Obama weak. You know, the suggestion that they knew there was going to be a terrorist attack in Benghazi and didn't do anything about it. So you get that trope going real good and get it just smoking hot, and then BB comes through on his end of the bargain. You know, maybe he just launches a couple of airstrikes. I'm nothing serious, but just enough to say, you know, oh, we need America's help. You know, we've reached the red line.
Yeah, I think that the outcomes are so ridiculously horrible. I just can't imagine that would happen. But anyway, you know, I gotta go. But your football team, boy.
Yeah, did you see the highlights of that?
No, I haven't had a chance to see any highlights of anything. I was too busy.
Geno Smith is an amazing young quarterback.
Yeah, it looks to be incredible. But I mean, I didn't have, you know, but have they lost yet?
No.
We all good.
We go to Austin next Saturday. It's a night game. It'll be 4 p.m. Saturday your time, and it should be, wow.
I mean, listen, in the meantime, though, you know, as cute as Sanchez is, I have to put that away. Did you hear what the owner of that team
said? Yeah, is that just crazy?
I know it's, you know, I should, you know, because they're just all oligarchs. You can't escape it. They're disgusting people, these people who run these teams, but I really could have done without that, you know?
Yeah, Woody Johnson is the owner of the New York Jets. The Jets yesterday got pounded by the Niners, 34-0 at home. I know Texas Betsy is just in anguish somewhere. She's a Jets fan. They couldn't. I don't think Tim Tebow could even. He was probably over there praying or something, and it didn't help. But then along comes Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, and he says he would rather have Romney win the presidency than see the Jets have a successful season.
Well, it sounds like that's how all the owners feel about all their dealings with the NFL. They could give a F about it as long as they can, because the lockout didn't show much concern about their business. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I take him at his word. I surely do. And this is
well. I mean, doesn't this sort of conjure up the Steve Young again? They don't care.
Right. No, I know, but I'm gonna have to get on some other bandwagon for the rest of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I understand. And that's tough because, I mean, we know you had a little NFL crush going on Sanchez.
Whatever, I mean. And he's now dating, what's-his-face's leftover. What's her name?
Oh.
He's married to the basketball player.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway. I know. I really need to give it all a rest. But listen, have a good evening.
Hey, you too, Sandra.
All right, bye.
See you now. Bye. 3 minutes past the hour. That's our buddy Sandra from California, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody home?
Bob!
Oh, yeah.
Andy!
Oh, hey, Andy.
How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Hey, you actually went to that game? I'm doing fine.
No, I didn't go. We were doing a Prism broadcast, and I was having to, Prism West Virginia, Dr. Bill's History Chats, and I was having to check in remotely, but I just kept watching the score go up and up and up. You know, and nothing was safe. Nothing was safe. 25 seconds to go, we're up 35-28 in the first half, and with the ball on, like, the 10-yard line, Baylor went 90 or 80 or whatever yards in just one pass play to tie it up going into the locker room. You know, damn, there's a lot to like in that offense, Andy. But gee whiz, how's the defensive coordinator even got a job now? Either one of them, for that matter.
Oh, absolutely. I was gonna take on the same meme. Did the defenses even show up? I mean, it was like there was no defensive backs there at all. It was just like a game of catch between both quarterbacks and the receivers. It was just bang, 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 off to the races, you know? Is everybody just chasing a parade? Was that guy Stedman? Is that his name?
Yeah, Stedman Bailey. Stedman Bailey went wild. Tavon Austin. And then we added a third guy into the mix.
Right, he's got three good receivers he can throw to.
But you know, it's a good thing they can hang 70 points because, you know, you got to feel a little bit bad for Baylor when you score 63 points. You really ought to win.
Like you said, I guess they were lucky that they even got away with that because at the end of the game, Baylor made a march down the field and it could have gone the other way. If Baylor had converted, but they got stopped.
But you know, the Mountaineers, I mean, it was like an NBA game. You know, the people who had the ball last won.
Right.
If the Mountaineers, what's his name, Garrison, had not busted off a 17-yard run with about 30 seconds to go, they would have gotten the ball again.
Yeah.
And it could have gone to overtime, and then the score may have wound up 112 to 105.
Right.
Yeah, it's nuts. But you know, that wasn't the only game that was like that. Texas and Oklahoma State set fire to the scoreboard, and so did Georgia and Tennessee. If Tennessee hadn't kind of they have three turnovers in the last 10 minutes or something, Georgia would be out of the top 10, which would suit me fine because I don't think Georgia, South Carolina, or there was one other one are any better than the Mountaineers are. Suspect defense notwithstanding.
Right, right.
I'd love to be in Austin next weekend for that game. Unfortunately, it can't happen, but yeah, that should be fun. because Texas is undefeated and what, number 12 or number 10, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know where Texas is, but I guess the Mountaineers are like 8 or 9. Right?
Yeah, we had to move up one because Stanford lost to Washington.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm surprised Texas is actually behind the Mountaineers, but see what happens. So the Mountaineers should win.
Being a home game, I would be surprised if we were favored by much more than a touchdown. I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of those 3-point spreads. Because see, the spread on this last game was like 11 or 12 or 15 points, and we didn't get anywhere near it.
Yeah. Well, what an exciting game to watch, anyway.
Yeah, it was fun. And you know, the defenses had to just be exhausted because they didn't do anything but chase the other team for 4 solid quarters. It was nothing but wind sprints.
It's like following a parade.
Yeah.
Chasing those wide receivers.
But, yeah, those three receivers, and especially Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin, and especially Geno Smith, what an awesome young man he is. Even had LeBron James tweeting about him during the game. He's got a great work ethic. He doesn't have a big head. They interviewed him after the game. They said, "Well, you're going to go out into the town and celebrate tonight?" He said, "No, I'm going over to the film room and watch some Texas film. That's how I'm celebrating." You got to respect that.
His dedication. Well, what was it that Stedman and him actually played football in high school together? That's
yeah.
Deal?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Probably known each other for a long time.
And you can see that, you know, when he hits them in stride.
Yeah.
And you don't see a lot of quarterbacks doing that anymore. Just, you know, the guy just keeps running the same speed and the ball drops in his arms. It's a beautiful thing to behold.
Yeah, well, getting off the subject of college football.
Yes, we'll stop being shallow now.
Hey, that H.R. 5959, you're getting the job done, man. You should be proud.
We're trying. We're trying.
And you got Jerry McNerney?
Yep.
Hey, I even called his office today, and I thanked him.
Awesome. That kind of follow-up's really important because it's going to have to be reintroduced, Andy, in the next Congress.
Yeah. And I hammered his rear end, too, because he is a blue dog, and mostly he disappoints. And I went through that with their staffer. You know, on a recent bill, the tax bill, he voted with the Republicans to extend the Bush tax cuts. That's the kind of Congressman McNerney is. And it took him kicking. He voted against it before he voted for it, the Affordable Health Care Act. So feel good that you got a blue dog like Jerry McNerney on your side. And the good thing about that is I'm using that against the other Congress people, because now I have to change my positioning, because if you're going to be to the right of Jerry McNerney, you're in trouble. You're out of the liberal category.
And I saw that you've taken your advocacy into the larger group there.
I got an opportunity, and we had an editor from a paper that's associated with the New York Times give a talk at our PDA meeting in San Francisco. So we got a real good turnout. The guy's name is Tim Redman. He writes for the Bayview Guardian, it's called, and it's affiliated with the New York Times. They take some of his articles. So he spoke at our PDA meeting, and we got 60 or 70 people to show up. So I asked the guy that's in charge of the group if I could give a quick talk on your H.R. 5959, and I happened to have your T-shirt on.
Oh, you got the T-shirt?
Yeah, and I was able to walk, you know, stand up with the T-shirt and show the hillbilly stuff, and since we had so many people there, they were really, you know, they were there for the talk by this editor, which there are a lot of elections going on in the city elections, so we got a good turnout, 60 or 70 people, and so people actually came up to me after the meeting, were asking me a bunch of questions and wanted more information on it, because I guess we, you know, I hit a chord with a bunch of liberals there, so that was pretty interesting. So we'll see if they get on the ball and do something.
Now, did you tell them where they can get the cool T-shirt?
I guess I should have. But
it is. It's like Jug of Punch has one. I mean, it's a conversation starter, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I gave them all the info on the websites. and stuff. You know, well, yeah. You probably saw the email I sent. It's all there.
Right.
They have everything they need to, you know, every bit of information you want on the YAIC Act. I gave them, with links, I gave them that opportunity to get.
I think, you know, I was talking with my colleague Bo the other day, and, you know, we agreed, and it's everybody else in the YAIC campaign, too. You know, this is not some sort of academic exercise, Andy. We intend to pass this bill. And
well, of course, you give it your, you know, you give it your best shot. You try.
Well, I mean, there are bills that go into Congress for the purpose of, you know, making a point or seeing if, you know, throwing something up against the wall and seeing if it sticks, or running it up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes. That was not the intent behind this. The intent was to craft as good a bill as we could get it introduced in the Congress, and begin working it through the House with the intention of actually passing it and sending it to the Senate.
Well, the idea...
And I think we're going to do it.
Well, the idea... Well, you got to get a Democratic Congress, for God's sakes.
Yeah, we do.
The idea is you got to get the information out there. You got to make it so people understand that it is... You know, you got to keep trying. A lot of times it takes... The Republicans never effing give up. You know that. They'll
right.
stuff it down your throat. Like with the killing the Affordable Health Care Act, they'll stick it down your throat 31 times, while the Democrats, these lousy cowards that we have, will try once, and then they'll go home. They'll take their marbles. Or the Republicans will keep on shoving it down your throat and just mess it 31 times. Okay, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah,
you got to be a junkyard dog. You got to be relentless.
Well, how is it that you and I and the Horn family can understand that, Andy? And it seems like they can't.
Yeah, because they don't. Evidently, these Democrats don't have their skin in the game. So you know, I don't know if I said, but my congresswoman is starting to get me pissed off. She is getting me pissed off. And I'm not happy. And I'm going to start mouthing off about her because of this. Especially once I saw when you got 10 Democrats in California signed on and she's not one of them. What does that say about her? Because she makes herself out to be the big woman's rights people. The person that's always there out looking for women. Well, if she's not going to look out for the women in Appalachia, what good is she? She can't look out for our people in West Virginia and Kentucky and Ohio and Pennsylvania. Then what effing good is she? She's nothing. And she stands for nothing. All that is garbage if she can't get behind this. But that's another, you know, that's my opinion.
But I think, you know, I think things like this.
Her. She proved what she is by not signing up to this, because this is a no-brainer. But what she's supposed to stand for.
You would think, but you know, we've been given tasks, things like, you know, getting more people from her district to sign on to wanting this bill, and so when that happens, supposedly she'll sign on.
Right.
But
well,
you know,
I'm sending emails to everybody I know who's on the radio here, who's a liberal voice, to see. So if you get any calls from anybody to get airtime, you know, any time on the weekend or something, so you can at least hit her district and hit people. No, I'll keep hitting the people I know. But
absolutely, I'll talk to anybody. You know,
right.
You know me, Andy.
Right, right. I know. So if you do, I'm trying. I'm trying to get you on the air with somebody, so at least you could hit some bodies and maybe get some more calls into her people. So we'll keep. You know, we'll keep trying until we get. Like I said, she's starting to get.
And I think we'll bring her along.
Yeah. Anyway, you know what? So we'll keep up with that. I got you hooked up in Sacramento too. I talked to a bunch of people in Sacramento. You might have seen too, and they. I had a few phone conversations with some of the, you know, more activist types. So maybe we'll get something going on down there too. Sandra's neck of the woods. Where I used to live myself. But there are some Congress people there you don't have signed up yet either.
No, and
who also put themselves out.
And you know, I'll be candid. Right. Some of what we have not done so far. I mean, remember, thus far the AIC campaign, we've had a lot of great logistical support from a magnificent organization called Earth Justice. Okay. But the
I used to be a member.
The legwork.
I had money.
Yeah. There's a Jimmy Buffett song out there called "I Used to Have Money One Time."
When I had money, I used to be a strong supporter. Earth Justice does a great job.
Oh, they are magnificent, absolutely magnificent.
They're one of the real.
As far as the door knocking and the wearing the shoe leather off the bottoms of your soles of your shoes is concerned, yeah, you know, that's almost entirely been carried by one guy, and that's Bo Webb. And I've helped out where I can, and Agnes and Ferg and Margie have helped out. Other members of the AIC campaign, people like Vernon and Junior and Eric and Holly, have done their part too. But you know, it's because we're operating this thing on a shoestring.
Well, again, like I said, whoever got Jerry McNerney on board.
That was Bo's persistence in getting the meeting, and he and I were in that meeting.
You hooked the blue dog there. You might even mention one of the people that are pushing this in California. I helped out his campaign when he originally got elected. I put in a lot of shoe leather, which really upset me because he didn't turn out the way I'd hoped he would. I think I mentioned that in an email to you, that he's been totally, you know, a center right Democrat and supporting the war, supporting the all the civil rights stuff, the Patriot Act, you know, you name it. He's just in line with the rest of the Democrats for the most part, and couldn't even get him to support. He was against the Affordable Care Act before he was for it. I mean, the guy, and I ran around places like Stockton and Lodi, California on weekends to help get him elected, to get rid of the Republican piece of trash they had in there, who was, you know, like next to Attila the Hun or Hermann Goering as a representative. So we got him instead. But on this one, he came through. So somebody who hooked him ought to be proud.
Well, one of the things that I saw recently, and I wanted to ask you, I saw a quote from Mary Bono about a part of her district that I found just sickening.
That's Palm Springs.
Well, I mean, but
she's,
but there's
a real part of her district is real risk, is real ritzy. But there's a guy, I think it's Raul Ruiz or something like that, is his name, who's a Democrat, who's, I don't think he's ever run for office, and he's supposed to have a pretty good pop. He supposedly did pretty good in the primaries against her, and he's real progressive, and they think he might have a shot at taking her out, which is pretty cool. Anyway,
well, I'm trying to find the quote here. Maybe it wasn't Move On. Maybe it was DFA. But there was
they do have a candidate down there that's and there's a famous actor that's Sean Penn. Is a big proponent of this guy. He's buddies with Sean Penn because this guy worked in Haiti, to the guy who's running against Bono. And he's really clued in pretty well to the Hispanic community in that area. But there is a real upper crust section of her district.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. She described the, is it Coachella? Is that the correct pronunciation? She described the Coachella and East Valley, which is more than a third of her district, as, quote, a third world toilet. And yeah, her opponent is
a guy probably wins. That's good to say that.
Raul Ruiz is her opponent, and
there
he grew up in that valley.
Yeah.
And then he went to Harvard Medical School, and he came back to open up a free clinic and give medical care to those who need it most. But yeah, Mary Bono Mack described a third of her district as a third world toilet.
Well, he's supposed to have a good pop. And she keeps saying baloney like that, he'll win.
God, it would be nice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the math will work out to take the House back, but damn, I mean, just 25 seats. That doesn't seem like a lot, does it, Andy?
You know, Bob, if they had Howard Dean in there, ahead of the DNC or the Congressional Campaign Committee, this would be an effing no-brainer. I'm convinced of that. This would be a no-brainer. The Democrats would mop up this country. But because you have these corporate pieces of trash at the upper echelon of the Democratic Party, it don't happen. You know, everything's on the shoestring. Nothing's really the way it, money isn't allocated the way it should be allocated. The strategy isn't set correctly.
And you know, it's funny. It's funny because
reading this party,
you've got. I mean, look at the just an example of the exact opposite, Andy. Now here, my congressman is Nick Rahal. Now Nick has been in the House of Representatives since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. I mean, way past 30 years, okay? And here is, you know, here's an opponent. The guy, he's a clown named Rick Snuffer. Really, Snuffer. Not kidding. And they've poured money into his campaigns, and he's running slick-ass ads, basically equating, I mean, every campaign ad you see here in West Virginia is an anti-Obama ad. It doesn't matter if the dude is running for county commission. He's just like Barack Obama. I mean, that quote that I saw last time I was in D.C. still resonates with me, where the voiceover announcer for the Republican Governors Association says, and this is in a this is in the governor's race in West Virginia. It has nothing to do with the presidential race. The voiceover says, Barack Obama promised our children change, but that change has darkened.
I've heard that one before.
Oh, my God. And it's all, if you see an ad in the governor's race, it's picture. You'd think that Barack Obama was running for governor of West Virginia.
You know, if I were doing the ads by the Republicans, I would do the one that I heard on the BBC of a woman, a black woman in Chicago interviewed that said, Barack Obama let us down. He didn't bring change because instead of being six blocks away from his home in Chicago helping out, you know, the black neighborhoods here, he played golf 104 times this year in his 4-year term. And that's fact. The guy has been on the golf course. He's played 104 rounds of golf, 18-hole rounds of golf. That's one of the higher numbers for a president. That's your problem with the leadership of the Democratic Party, is they're too much engaged at the top and with the top 1%, and they're not engaged with the people. If I were the Republicans, that's the ad I would run. And this woman was on the BBC, and she's some leader in Chicago in the black community. That's the ad I would run. But, of course, the Republicans can't really run an ad like that because they'd be just as much to blame for that kind of garbage.
Well, because there's a photo opportunity, or there are photographs out there of John Boehner playing golf with Barack Obama.
He'd be on the golf course almost 104 times in his 4-year term, you know, just like a regular establishment Republican candidate would be. But that's your Democrat. And that's the problem.
Well, what are you looking for out of Wednesday's pageant?
To give another presentation on H.R. 5959 at my DFA meeting that night when we have that on.
Oh, really? Well, that'll be awesome.
I made a printout of the piece I put on the posted to the website, and I'll hand that out at the meeting and do some other stuff too. But my DFA group is supposed to have that on the big screen while we're having our meeting. So,
well, it'll be interesting because there's all this positioning going on, like that clip I played from Ralph Reed, you know, the sleaze merchant, talking about how don't make it. He uses words that tickle the ears. So they're trying to build up Obama as some sort of great orator and play down play down Willard.
I give you a lot of credit for listening to David Gregory because I couldn't do it.
I wanted to take a bath in bleach water after that, Andy.
He's such a scumbag. He is such a sellout. I mean, if you can't see through that he's just a Republican operative and a tool of the Republican Party, it's a joke. And to have Ralph Reed on, who is a criminal, for God's sake, who got caught up in the Abramoff scandal, is another joke resurrected.
What is it?
You'd never hear hide or hair of him again.
Right, and ultimately, that's the question. What does it take to destroy one's credibility inside the Republican Party?
No, you don't. Never gets destroyed. It's always resurrected. But if you're a Democrat, you'd be flipping burgers and like that congressman.
You'd be Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, you'd be I'm thinking of that other guy that used to be from Modesto that's now in Phoenix or something, or Tucson, runs a laundry or something. You know, your career would be over. Anyway. Well, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. You know, Obama hopefully will come up with the fast, quick answers. He's usually pretty good on his feet. Hopefully he'll, you know, he's good with the gift of gab. He's good with the man. He's no action. There's no action there. But when it comes to rhetoric, he's the man. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but I think he's going, it's like watching a scratch golfer. There's the golf analogy. It's like watching a scratch golfer go up against, or at least the Republicans and the for-profit media thus far have been positioning this, Andy, as a scratch golfer going up with against a guy with an 18 handicap. So as long as Willard doesn't start screeching about the apocalypse and the arrival of the spaceships from Kolob, it looks like the for-profit media are already primed to hand him the victory, whether he wins or not. I mean, if he comes off looking terrible, well, you know, that's just because Barack Obama has such an advantage over him. He's unfairly talented, and no one understands that's not Willard's forte. That, you know, he's a business leader. I mean, I can tell it's going to be all over. I mean, that's what you're going to find on Thursday. I mean, I'll be happy to admit that I'm wrong if I am, Andy, but I doubt I will be.
The only thing I would think is that because Willard, the bishop, has just been through a whole primary process with the rest of the gang of ruthless criminals on the Republican ticket, that he's used to, talking and giving quick quips and giving probably more concise answers, and he's just more at the top of his game than Obama's going to be a little rusty because he hasn't had a primary. That's the benefit of having a primary candidate. At least you could keep up and be ready for, you know, everything that's going to be asked, and more on the top of your game, and I'm better on your feet. So Obama might be rusty. That would be the only thing I could think of happening. That Romney might have the edge in that because he just, like I said, just through a primary process.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, when I left you last, I was talking about this private equity scandal that's going on with the taxes.
Right.
They were meshing in fees, that management fees that they were taking, and converting them into capital gains and taking hundreds of millions in tax benefits. Now, the firm when I left you, the firms that are doing that are Kohlberg, Kravis, and Roberts, TPG Capital, Sun Capital, Apollo Global Management, Silver Lake, and Bain Capital were the ones doing it. And then you had two firms that weren't doing it because they thought it was illegal. And those were the Carlyle Group, which, of course, is the Bush family's venture, and Blackstone, which is another one of the real large players in the private equity scheme. So I think there's some...
Blackstone's the biggest of all, isn't it?
I think they are. That's BlackRock we're thinking of as far as...
Yeah, BlackRock.
You know, actually managing asset managers. So this is private equity. But Blackstone might be the largest private equity. They're big. But they wouldn't do this particular accounting scheme for a tax. It's really a tax aversion scheme to not accept income, but instead convert it into capital gains so you're saving all this. So there might be some traction here.
And also another thing, I sent you an email about Sweden.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you have that, your contact there. Is it
Scott, yeah.
In Sweden that is up, but Sweden's got a real right-wing government. And they're going to do this stimulus. They're calling it a stimulus program, but they're doing tax cuts. You know, they're cutting the corporate tax from 26.3 down to 22, and they're causing that a stimulus. And then the guy that's head of the government there, his name is Frederick Reinfeldt, which is Karl Rove's buddy, because Karl Rove helped get this guy elected. That's why you have the whole Julian Assange garbage, because these guys are connected to the right wing in this country, and they are doing the same thing that, you know, the corporatists want here. They're lowering the corrate tax rate, and even this guy is even quoted to say the most harmful tax of all is the corporate tax. We have to lower it. And they're also going to try to lower the pension tax, you know, the tax that builds the pension funds for all the people, all the workers, the beneficiaries. And they're also going to work on lowering personal tax. And they're calling this a stimulus package, just like the efforts do here. You know, the Republicans will call that it's not a stimulus. There's no stimulus to lowering taxes on the top tax bracket. Our GDP does better.
But see, Andy, that's the problem. Ever since
higher on the rich.
Ever since we started talking about stimulus, you know, the first stimulus package coming out of the Bush administration, stimulus is now redefined as cutting taxes on the rich.
Yeah, and that's baloney.
And it's past baloney. It's a fraud.
Right. Bob Shuler even proved that in a New York Times article he did back in August or late July, where he showed that from like 1948 to 1963, when the rate was 91% from 1948 to 1963, 20-year. Now, about a 20-year period or so, there was a 3.7% GDP average. Whereas if you took all the years from like 1920 to 2011, the GDP average is like 3.2. So you get 0.5 percentage points higher during the year when taxes at the top were 91%. Maybe economy did great. It did better than the average when taxes are higher. And not only higher, that's ridiculously higher. That means you can't really create millionaires and billionaires when you have a 91% tax rate. But you're growing the economy like crazy. It's going gangbusters.
Right. And the thing, I don't know how we get this across, but if billionaires don't turn into trillionaires, it really doesn't have that much of a net impact on the overall economy. Whereas if people making 20,000 can make 50, everything takes off, right?
Bingo. Bingo. Exactly. That's what builds the economy. It's the demand, the consumption, because most of GDP, 70% of GDP is consumption. And you pull that demand up, you're going to drive those GDP numbers. And that's what the Republicans, oh, growth! We need growth! If you want growth, give money to the people that are going to consume, for God's sake. Then you'll get your growth. You don't give it to the people at the top, because it never trickles down. It just trickles on us.
Oh, by the way, did you catch that story, Andy, breaking today, that the chair of President Obama's Mortgage Fraud Task Force, you know, Eric Schneiderman of New York, has actually filed a lawsuit against J.P. Morgan Chase over mortgage securities fraud?
I hadn't seen that yet. I haven't totally gotten done with the paper reading it, but that sounds like pretty good news. See, the good thing about Eric Schneiderman and the state of New York is they have the Martin Act there, which has a much lower bar as far as fraudulent activity goes. So it's much easier to get a conviction there on different securities related. And that's like a 1920s law, the Martin Act. And Elliot Spitzer was real good on using that. Because you put that Martin Act into effect, and the bar is much lower. You know, it's something about, you know, you don't have to prove that the person actually intended to commit the fraud. The fraud just has to happen. You know,
right.
They really were trying to do it premeditated or not. If it just happened, you're responsible. Now, you don't have to prove that they meant it to happen, that it wasn't an accident. You don't have to prove, you know, if it's an accident, so what? You're still responsible.
Well, the heart and soul of the allegation in this particular suit, Andy, is, and this is a quote, I guess, from the suit papers, that J.P. Morgan Chase was aware that many of their loan originators were selling defective loans, but continued to buy and securitize those loans, and that they then hustled them as being good.
Right, and they put high credit ratings. Got the bastards in the credit rating agencies.
Well, this is another excerpt from the complaint. Other internal communications reflect defendants, and that's J.P. Morgan Chase. Other internal communications reflect defendants' awareness of the bad quality of loans that were being included in other securitizations. And this just blows my mind that this goes into suit papers, that these kind of... In connection with the Bear Stearns Second Lien Trust 2007-1 securitization, for example, one Bear Stearns executive asked whether the securitization was a going-out-of-business sale and expressed a desire to close this dog. In another internal email, the SACO 2006-8 securitization was referred to as a sack of shit and a shit breather. Now these are this is a civil complaint filed in the trial court of the city of New York.
Sounds like a slam dunk to me. That's just like Levin was saying, Carl Levin in the Senate. Same thing, just a bunch of shitty deals.
Yeah,
just a bunch of shitty deals, and what you want to do is you want to get them off your books, and that's what Wall Street
and
does.
And you do it, well. It's all just a glorified game of old maid, isn't it?
Put the lipstick on the pig.
Get somebody to pull the Queen of Spades out of your hand, and you're in the clear.
Right. Get some moron to buy it, who doesn't do their proper due diligence, and relies on you when you are just trying to sell them, like they said, a sack of shit. And there you go. Jesus.
I would be,
Sounds like they got them dead to rights, man. I hope they take those guys.
Well, yeah, they do, but the outcome of a civil suit like that...
they're not putting anybody in jail.
Well, you can't put somebody in jail in a civil suit. I mean,
right.
it goes without saying. But, you know, I worry that damages will not be appropriate. Because what this calls for, conduct on that level, Andy, seems to call for the very black-letter law definition of punitive damages. But we've seen what the Supreme Court of the United States has done to that definition over the years, especially with regard to the Exxon Valdez case.
Yeah.
You know, the purpose, in order for a jury to properly be able to assess punitive damages, they have to be able to see the real bottom line of the defendant once they've been determined to be liable. And taking that bottom line, they've got to write down a number on the verdict form that is big enough to do fit to do punishing harm to the company, because punitive means to punish. And if it's 1% of the daily intake in 1 hour of the company, there's no way that you can make the argument that is some form of punishment. But the Supreme Court of the United States has said that. The punitive damages are easily to be construed as excessive, when by definition punitive damages are supposed to be excessive. They are supposed to hurt. You know, the right wingers are real good at saying, well, you know, a little dirtbag went to prison, what do you think? I mean, prison ain't supposed to be no fun. But they can't quite muster up the same sense about punishing, you know, one of these corporate persons.
Right.
And it's repugnant.
Absolutely.
So it would be nice, and I'm going to try to keep an eye on this, but I look for a settlement. Yeah, all right, here, you've got us dead to right on $1 trillion. We'll pay you $100 million. We'll pay you $20 million. You know, because we saw that happen down here in West Virginia with regard to Massey Energy. Those people got caught dead to rights, violating practically every mining regulation there was. They were on the hook for ridiculous number, like $1 billion in fines, and they paid $20 million.
Right.
and some of which, if I'm recalling the same case, I mean, even if I'm not, it really happened. The state of West Virginia allowed the company to pay off its fine, I'm not kidding, in rocks.
Ugh.
Rocks.
Oh, how horrible. And I hate that. And that Judge Rakoff of, I think, the Southern District of New York brings this up, has brought this up. When you don't deny or admit guilt, I hate that. I hate that. And they just settle. Don't deny or admit guilt. And they just keep on doing it. It's just a cost to business. And they keep doing it.
Right. And as long, and that's what I'm getting at. As long as the, as long as the sum paid is not sufficient to merit punishment, then that's all it is. It's cost of doing business. It's the same thing as, you know, we talked about Sheldon Adelson. So what if he puts in $100 million? If the return on that is that he makes $1 billion?
It's well worth it.
It's worth
every penny.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you know, from a tax standpoint, legal judgments are write-offs, are they not?
Yes. Correct.
And so if J.P. Morgan Chase gets a judgment entered against it for $100 million, that's $100 million in taxes they don't pay.
Well, 35 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
We're statutory, but...
Right, but I mean, you
10 or 15 cents on the dollar.
On a rate that's already ridiculously low.
Yeah, it'll be much lower rate.
So it seems like it's hard for us to win in either one of these circumstances.
There's got to be criminal. There's got
to
be criminal.
Somebody needs to go to jail.
Exactly. That's the only way it stops.
But we know that we have an attorney general who does not like to send corporate executives or board members to jail.
Only because he is one. He's part of that...
No, he's part of that culture. You know, it goes back to the Chiquita Banana case,
right,
and I will never forget that.
Right.
You know, I think about that. You know, there's the entire board of Chiquita Banana, who was since absorbed by somebody else, but maybe Dole. But there's the entire corporate board of Chiquita Banana, and they know that there are death squads roaming the Colombian night, putting bullets behind the ears of labor organizers.
Right.
And if you've got any kind of an imagination at all, if you've got any kind of a desire to do empathy, if you can imagine that knock on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you can imagine children huddled in a corner, if you can imagine a terrified wife as they drag you out into the night and the sharp snap of a pistol and then nothing, and an engine starts, and they go away. And Chiquita Banana knew about every last bit of that.
Well, they paid the hitman to do it.
They paid the hitman to do it. And Eric Holder says, you know, nobody here needs to go to jail for that. Of course, he was representing Chiquita Banana at the time. But I see nothing to indicate that his attitude to that has changed.
Yeah.
I mean, here it is. The next Easter will be, what, 3 years? Since the Upper Big Branch disaster,
right,
and we've had, you know, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia has tried a couple of low-level working guys in relation to it, and gotten a couple of pleas or so for it and so forth. But I haven't heard a damn word that at any point in time an indictment will be handed up by a grand jury against Don Blankenship. Or against the board of directors, the former board of directors of Massey Energy. And there's no way that they shouldn't be.
Right. White-collar crime is running rampant under Eric Holder. It's Katie, bar the door, do whatever you want to do. You'll get away with it because you've got a friend at the AG. You've got a friend in Eric Holder at the DOJ.
Yeah. Riffing off the old Chiquita Banana jingle, Andy. Our buddy Randy said... my name is Eric Holder, and I'm here to say we killed a lot of leaders in the union today.
You better believe it.
Give me that Carmen Miranda hat. Oh, Jesus.
Just real quick, the last time I talked to you, you're exactly right. I don't know why I hesitated when you mentioned about the numbers as far as job creation with Jimmy Carter at 3.28 was the second best next to Johnson, which was 3.62%. gain in the private sector. Yeah, you were exactly right. You know, that's exactly right. Jimmy Carter.
But he is a name for being put upon in this country.
Right. Had the second best private
job creation numbers percentage change than any other president but Johnson, who had the highest.
Ronald Reagan didn't do it. Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush are way down there at the bottom.
Right. Reagan was even behind Clinton. Clinton was even higher.
Yeah, it goes...
three presidents higher.
Yeah. It goes Johnson, Carter...
Clinton,
Obama, Reagan, H.W.W.
Well, actually, Reagan was, the second term was 2.8.
Yeah.
Anyway, but again, you said it. You know, Carter just keeps on getting maligned, and he shouldn't be, because he was a damn good president.
Well, for instance, this business with what the Republicans are doing, Andy, you know, the Jimmy Carterization of Barack Obama, this latest October surprise plan of theirs. You would think that, for instance, that disaster in the desert with the attempted hostage rescue, you would think that Jimmy Carter personally sabotaged those damned helicopters. You remember why those things crashed? They crashed because they couldn't fly in sand.
Colonel Boykin. Colonel Boykin's planning.
Yeah.
He was ahead of that. That was his baby. Colonel Boykin. The old right-wing Christian theocrat.
Bingo.
Screwed that up.
I guess that means that Jesus dropped the ball.
Yeah. Hey, just real quick, I gotta run off to a city council meeting. We're going to try to get the city council of Palo Alto to support Proposition 37 with the GMO labeling.
Yeah.
So I'm going to run off to that.
But, good luck.
Yeah, just so you know, the opposition to that has dropped. The count now is $32 million.
Jesus, and another month to go.
Yeah, against us. And what they're pushing is they're trying to push that, the FDA, the U.S. FDA and the AMA have all come down that GMOs, you know, are just as good as non-GMOs, as organic. There's no difference between the two, even though nobody's really tested that, except for when you see the test from France where they did some law.
Well, I was going to say, is anybody making any hay out of that French study that says that people get sick?
Sure. Sure. And there's tons of people that have come down, you know, that there's many diseases that GMOs seem to be linked to, you know, with the stomach and diabetes and stomach ulcers and cancers and kidneys and so forth.
And ultimately, isn't that a losing argument? Shouldn't that be a losing argument for them, Andy? Because if it's all just the same, then labeling is no big deal.
Right.
It just allows people to make a consumer choice in the free market, right?
Right. You could turn it that way, exactly. And it just kills me, too, because those agencies are all captive anyway. They're all full of Monsanto people, and Malloy brought that out on his show. There's a guy named Beachy, I think is another guy, was it Michael Beachy, and there's another guy named Taylor at the USDA, and there's somebody else at the FDA, you know, all ex-Monsanto people, and they're the money being thrown in, and it really turns me off, too. The companies going after us really turns me off, like, Smuckers, J.M. Smuckers, you know, is one of the companies that's putting in money against this. General Mills is against. Coca-Cola is putting in money on the anti-labeling side. PepsiCo, Bayer. Now, watch where you get your aspirin, man. Nestle, watch where you get your chocolate.
Oh, Nestle's been just slap evil for generations, haven't
they? Right, they're friggin' anti-GMO labeling. Dean Foods. You know, the good old right winger, Jimmy Dane.
What a piece of crap.
Friggin' Jimmy Dane. Dean Foods is.
Yeah, and you know, this is interesting. Randy just pointed out that the Russians, for God's sakes, are even saying no to at least one strain of GMO corn.
I know.
You know, when Vladimir Putin, when Pooty Poot doesn't want it.
And, you know, the Haitians, when they dropped all those GMO seeds on the Haitians to try to help rebuild their country after the storm, they just had riots there and dumped it all into the sea. Get this gut, send it back. Get it out of here. This is poison. People in the rest of the world know that it is. It's toxic, man. And the people in the industry know that too. As soon as you label something
and say this is a GMO, it is the same as putting a skull and crossbones on your packaging. That is, it's like rat poison, and they know it, and they've even said as much.
I mean, it's
people, it's a GMO, it's all over.
And you know, Andy, I was looking earlier at this at today's headlines over at CNN as I was watching this sleazy Jimmy Carter meme develop against Barack Obama, and I just happened to scan down. The headlines at CNN are always an exercise in vacuity. And it wasn't too far down to where you get to, yeah, there it is, ear grows on cancer patient's arm. And that immediately made me think of the GMO stuff, because, you know, it does. It creates this, because, you know, you've got goat gut genes being spliced into potatoes and, you know, just nasty shit like that. And, you know, and we don't know that. It's right. You're right. It's a skull and crossbones on a label, because, you know, it creates images of, well, that was a lovely baked potato tonight. Oh, well, damn, there's a baby's arm growing out of my head.
Right.
And I think, you know, Monsanto knows that people don't want to eat that crap.
Absolutely. Because they already know that that's what happened in Europe. As soon as they had to do the labeling, they had to take the GMO out of the product, because the products wouldn't sell.
Right. Just sat on the shelves.
You got to change the formula. Right. You got to change the formula, because people won't buy it. And they know it. And it's more expensive for them to use the real, organic, good-for-you, natural ingredients. It costs them more. And they have to be more competitive. But if they put the GMO stuff in, they make more profits. So it's a whole profit thing.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do that. But they know, as soon as they label it, it's going to sit on the shelf.
Well, but then again, I don't know that it will.
Yeah, well, you're
in the United States. No,
stupid.
Right, and the rest of the world. I mean, if I understand correctly from John Fox and Robert and other folks down there, Australia doesn't like them. I know from my German friends that they want nothing to do with them. The French can't stand the concept. But you know what? We would we'll eat anything. We're Americans. So maybe not, but you know, looking into the future, there's a lot.
The most propagandized, the most Edward Elbernized society on the face of the planet. That's the problem.
Yeah.
People here are just so inundated with propaganda, It's a shame.
Well, it is, and it is nonstop.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, just one other thing. When somebody called in, one of your emailers, I noticed he made a comment about the model for the terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
Hartman and Randy Rhodes have showed that liberals can make it. The only thing is that they've sold out. If you want to just get inundated with pro-democratic stuff and putting people like Charlie Rangold on the air to try to resurrect themselves, you can listen to those too. But if you want to get the real truth and the honest-to-God reality in the world, you listen to Bob Kincaid, and then you get the truth, and you get the unadulterated truth. But you won't get the truth from Hartman or Randy Rhodes.
Yeah, and I don't think it's conscious. I like Tom. He's a nice guy. I've never met Randy. But I don't think it's necessarily conscious, but there's a price to be paid for access, Andy.
Absolutely.
I don't have it.
They would not be on if they didn't do what they did for the Democrats, because they're the complement to the far right, and they have to do it just like MSNBC does for the Democrats, like a Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz do. You know, it's just to promote the Democratic Party, and that's what those two do as well.
And that's okay, but I mean, I just...
Right or wrong.
See, I can't do that. I can't do that my party right or wrong thing.
Can't. Right, and that's why...
And that's why we will, you know, for as long as this continues, it will continue, because people are determined to have something approaching no bullshit, unbiased approaches to
Right. You're the truth teller.
Well, thank you, Andy. Right, that's mighty kind.
I've taken up more than enough of your time.
Well, good luck at your meeting, and enjoy the debate Wednesday night.
Yeah, I got to get the heck down there.
All right. Take care, Andy.
Right.
See
you. Take care. You too. Bye.
Bye. It's our buddy Andy. Genuinely an activist. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, is this me?
Oh, that's you.
It's Lib in South Carolina.
Oh, hey, Lib. Got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry to come to you so late.
No. I have to apologize. I cut you out to watch Elizabeth Warren kick Scott Brown's ass all over the stage.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah. Look for it on Crooks and Liars and Political Carnival tomorrow. It is a sight to behold. Dick Gregory was a total ass.
He was allowed on that. He was on that panel?
He was the moderator.
Jesus criminy.
His first question was, so, Professor Warren, what is it about your heritage?
You're kidding. No, you're not kidding, I'm not surprised.
It was totally his audition tape for Fox Noise.
Well, I wish he'd get busy and go on over there. Maybe Rupert, I'm sure Rupert would pay him more than NBC does.
Oh yeah, well, he's worth more to them than he is to us. But, you have got to see that. And also, at the same time, C-SPAN put it on C-SPAN 2, Colonel Wayne Powell was up against Eric Cantor. And I flipped over and caught the last 10 minutes of that because it ran a little bit over. Wayne Powell kicked his ass pretty well too. So look for both of those. We've got a full day tomorrow before the big presidential thing on Wednesday.
Oh, I have no doubt. I'll be watching for it. Well, thanks, Lib. I appreciate hearing from you. Got to get out of here.
All right, man. Take care. Be well.
Thanks. You too.
I'll catch hour two on the replay.
All right. Good deal.
Thank you.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Our buddy Lib in South Carolina. Thanks, everybody, for making all this happen. Thank you for helping us make our nightly fundraising goal. We did. Thanks to you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.